sorry.
Blog Talk Radio.
Compromise the health and well-being of more than 373,000
seriously mentally ill adults and seriously emotionally disturbed children who would potentially not receive needed mental health services. 125,000 would be at risk for homelessness. Housing vouchers, shelter programs, and rural rent assistance are also on the chopping block. 600,000 women and children would be thrown off WIC. That's a special supplemental nutrition program for women and infants. 424,000 fewer AIDS tests, and 7,400 fewer patients would get HIV medication. No rent assistance for 7,300 AIDS patients. 807,000 fewer hospital visits for Native Americans. There'd be hospital closures. Debilitated low-income housing and closed projects. Without money to maintain low-income housing, sequestration would force public housing agencies to defer routine maintenance and capital repairs. No child care for 30,000 kids. No Head Start for 70,000 kids. That's horrible. Longer waits for disability payments. Social Security checks won't stop because of sequestration. Those payments are exempt from cuts. But Social Security Commissioner Michael J. Astru wrote on February 7th that the administrative cuts could mean the administration is slow to process disability claims and send money. $725 million in cuts for low-income and special needs students. The Department of Education would cut $725 million from its Title I grant programs for schools with large shares of low-income and special need kids. Cuts to schools on Indian reservations. The Department of Education would also cut $60 million from a $1.2 billion aid program for K-12 schools on federal lands, including Indian reservations. Native American tribes would lose almost $130 million. And that's funding from the Department of the Interior. The reductions would be necessary in many areas, including human services, law enforcement, school, economic development, etc. National and international security. There'll be higher risk of terrorism. The FBI's ability to catch terrorists and stop plots will be mitigated. The cuts include personal furloughs and stalled investigations, untranslated wiretaps. Well, they shouldn't be wiretapping a lot of people, I don't think. Less surveillance. The FBI won't be able to conduct as much surveillance. Classified information will be vulnerable to foreign spies. Counterintelligence will face cuts, raising the risk that foreign spies will gain access to national security information. We'll have an even more porous border. The Border Patrol will be cut. We'll have untended nukes. Sequestration means less security at U.S. military, at U.S. nuclear facilities. So that's pretty scary. U.S. less prepared for weapons of mass destruction. We won't have the FBI personnel to respond. The FBI will eventually be using broken equipment. They could even have trouble tracking fingerprints. There'll be a one-third cutback in Pacific naval presence. There'll be reduced Army readiness. No maintenance for some ships and planes. 46,000 defense jobs could be lost. Some Air Force planes won't be able to fly. There'll be less cybersecurity. $1 billion cut from disaster relief. That's from FEMA. First responder layoffs. You want to read a few, Leo, starting with that? Number 40, Coast Guard.
Okay. First responder layoffs.
Coast Guard.
And 40 is Coast Guard operations cut by a quarter. Drugs coming in on boats. 541 is $500 million cut from foreign economic and military aid. Both economic and military aid would be cut. Secretary of State John Kerry warned the committee, along with a $70 million cut to the U.S. aid budget. Kerry warned that the sequestration would force us to cut approximately $200 million from our humanitarian assistance accounts at a time when we face growing need in Syria, the Horn of Africa, and Shaw. U.S. aid would have to cease, reduce, or initiate. What's interesting about this is U.S. aid is nothing more than a CIA operation.
Yeah.
So we don't care if they cut that part. You know, $500 million cut was probably wise on that. 42, $380 million cut from global AIDS funding, all right, which is, not so cool. And then 43 is less security at U.S. facilities abroad, less protection for Americans abroad. Now, I'm amazed that they let that go after the big to-do they had over the killing of the ambassador there.
Yeah, I guess it wasn't that important.
It wasn't that important, so they cut security back again. All kinds of dough there. Okay, 44, freed up terror money. All right. Acting Treasury Secretary Neil Wolin warned the committee spending cuts required by the sequester would force a reduction in Treasury support of counterterrorism and anti-money laundering investigations, which could undermine Treasury's ability to block funds from flowing to dangerous individuals and organizations. I mean, they just caught people. They just caught and fined, HBS or whatever it was, for money laundering. $1 billion fine.
Yeah.
All right. And yet here, they're going to take money away from the investigations of that.
Yeah, doesn't make any
stupid
sense.
Stupid people. Okay, 45, the U.S. attorneys will take 2,600 fewer cases. Oh, right. Attorney General Eric Holder warned that the U.S. attorneys would handle 2,600 fewer cases in 2013 after cuts of nearly $100 million from their current budgets. Phew. And smaller unemployment checks. Sequestration would impact the integrity of the unemployment insurance program for long-term unemployed, more than 3.8 million people receiving emergency unemployment would be reduced as much as 9.4% of their checks. Fewer mine inspections, no job training for hundreds of thousands of people, less training for veterans, 1,928 fewer small business loans, slower reporting on economic data, less analysis of it. That's interesting.
Hmm.
Parks, can't use them. All your national parks are cut back or shut down.
Really? How many?
They're closed during the national parks are closed and limited their hours. Public should be aware that reduced hours of services provided in 398 national parks, 561 refuges, and over 258 public land units. Parks could reduce hours of operation, visitor centers, shorten seasons, possibly close camping, hiking, and recreational areas. And 128 refuges could close. Right? These are like birds and all other places. Drilling and exploration offshore and onshore. That's the Interior Department would mean delays in oil and gas permitting. 55, fewer air quality forecasts, and they won't be checking your air quality anymore. And 1,000 fewer environmental compliance inspections. Yeah. Doesn't that make it worthwhile to
the business will be thrilled.
They'll be polluting everywhere. And then less nuclear cleanup. Here we go. Yeah, the Republicans wrote this, I'm sure. The Energy Department would have to curtail cleanup efforts on old nuclear sites. Right? And these sites are all leaking like hell. So anyway, that's how 57 nightmares that has been caused by the
pretty scary. Get that and pretty scary, I think.
Yeah, not not so good. But let's go on to more.
Once that's the quest
of
past, you don't hear them talking much about it at all?
No, mainstream, they move on now. They don't talk about what got hurt.
No.
Or what's getting hurt.
They don't even mention it.
They're all interested in having another war.
Yeah.
Let's have more war. More war.
More sacrifice. More Americans killed.
Yeah, more army stuff. More stuff. More guns. Electrical guns. Okay. Rubio will pass citizenship with or without you, he states.
Nice
well,
guy.
This is interesting because it says this week Mark Rubio of Florida, Senator of Florida, joined what Washington Post Greg Sargent calls the slowdown caucus, meaning Rubio, who is a member of the Gang of Eight and a group of Republicans, are starting to back away from creating a common sense immigration process for the nation's 11 million aspiring citizens.
Oh.
Now, after it was announced this weekend, labor and the business community came to an agreement on an important aspect of an immigration deal. Rubio immediately began to express doubts. And, yeah, that's weird. And the Washington Post editorial board reports, at first, he led the charge trying to brand all overhaul of the immigration system as his signature achievement. Then when progress was made last weekend, he backed away, warning that talk of a breakthrough was premature. And is the Florida senator the once and future darling of the Tea Party throwing bombs for the sideline? Or is he a substantive architect of a workable new system? It's one or the other, Mr. Rubio needs to decide. Rubio does need to decide. America's working families support a realistic and reasonable roadmap to citizenship for aspiring citizens in keeping families together. We'll forge ahead with or without Rubio. Citizenship is the right thing to do. So it didn't say why he's pulling back. You know, it just said that he is. But that's interesting.
Must have had a lot of pressure.
Probably. Because they like illegal, you know, they like to have illegal,
yes,
untaxed, unburdened.
Well, they can pay them less than minimum wage and not pay any taxes.
They can sign them up and sign them up with unions and all kinds of stuff. They're not going to like that very much.
No, they'll have to pay them a living wage.
Yeah, that ain't the idea. You're missing the game, Ruby.
How about Boston taxi drivers' space exploitation?
Yeah, no, I'm trying to get this thing to work here.
It was worth a fun.
Jeez. Just for some reason, I just want to
get down. Go over here.
Yeah, easy to say by that. It's not happening. Wait a second.
Okay, now it's ready.
It's coming. There you go.
Boston taxi drivers face exploitation while owners make millions. They must be hired cabbies.
Pakistanis or something, the poor guys.
Boston's taxi system is riddled with staggering exploitation and abuses, according to an in-depth expose in the Boston Globe. Many of the city's 6,200 drivers are forced to pay nightly bribes for the keys to their cabs, start the shift already more than $100 in the red, and are frequently charged with phantom shortfalls in their fares they deposit to the cab owners. The report finds the owners of taxi medallions. Whoops, here we are. We have a little...
Some drivers call it the humiliation window. In the belly of Boston's biggest taxi garage, cabbies shuffle toward a scratched and grimy dispatcher's window. Many drivers, hoping to get a cab for a 12-hour shift, say they slipped at dispatcher's bribes of $5, $10, or even $20.
You'd be extra money, crazy money. If you don't pay that, you can't get a taxi.
While taxi passengers in Boston pay some of the highest rates among major U.S. cities, many drivers live in poverty. A Globe Spotlight investigation found that Boston's taxicab sector is plagued by petty bribery and overcharging of drivers, and the unit of the Boston Police Department that regulates cabs often turns a blind eye to fraud and abuse. The largely immigrant workforce of drivers experiences staggering exploitation at the hands of cab owners.
they deal with them, the driver, like trash.
Even before bribes and rip-offs, many cabbies struggle to get by.
Yes.
They may be behind the wheel for 60 hours a week or more, and their income can fluctuate unpredictably. Cabby Ahmed Ali Farah is a former driver for Boston Cab.
This is a job. It's a gambling. You don't know how much you make it.
The majority of Boston's 6,000 cabbies do not own the car they drive, nor the medallion attached to its trunk that is the license to own a cab. Instead, hundreds pay the medallion owners to drive for 12 or 24-hour shifts. Typical 12-hour shift fees can be around $120, including gas.
I start negative. You figure you start negative 120, and you take in 120, 110, and then you end up like, you know, paying $10 to drive a cab all night. You just didn't get lucky.
Kevin Pierre Duchemin is a former driver for Boston Cab.
If it's a good day, you make money. If it's not a good day, the owner will still make his money and you not.
The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics puts an average Boston cabbie's income at $27,000, with drivers often on the road for 60 hours a week or more, and can amount to minimum wage or less. Medallion owners, on the other hand, are paid for every shift. They can expect to gross about $60,000 per taxi annually, regardless of how well the drivers do.
Wow.
The price of medallions has skyrocketed in recent years, and today, each is worth about $600,000.
Holy shit.
Boston's largest taxi owner is multimillionaire Edward Tutungian, who owns Boston Cab. He has more than 370 taxi medallions, one out of every five in the city.
How did he get that?
They are worth over $200 million.
In 2006, Boston Cab Association was the first cab company to commit to purchasing hybrids for their fleet.
This 2012 video shows Tutungian receiving a Green Business Award from the City of Boston for converting most of his fleet to energy-efficient hybrids. But Tutungian is far from a model businessman. Amid lax or non-existent regulation of medallion owners by the city police, Tutungian's employees find ways to squeeze money out of drivers.
This company is not United States. It's a terror company.
Farah began his career at Boston Cab. In 2004, Farah filed a discrimination lawsuit against the company, but says he couldn't afford to pursue it.
The owner, if they do whatever they want.
But the drivers are treated disrespectfully in general.
Globe Spotlight reporter Bob Holler drove cabs in the 1970s to put himself through college. In late 2012, he got a new Hackney license and spent eight shifts driving for Boston Cab. He witnessed firsthand the driver's daily exploitation.
You notice that that the people who are dispatching out the cabs every day, giving the cabs out, are taking money from one driver after another.
It's amazing company I've never seen. It's not even the one I came from. It's even Somalia. They don't treat it like that.
One driver after another is putting $2, $5 or more into their hands, presumably to get better treatment.
In addition to bribes, Holler saw how the company nickeled and dimed drivers in other ways.
They tell you to fill your gas tank up at the end of the shift.
You fill up the gas like this until it's coming out.
I've done that. I fill my gas tank up until it overflows onto my shoes and then go into the garage, which is less than three blocks away, and they'll charge me another $2 for gas, which is completely unfair.
Overcharges for gas from all the drivers combined could add up to as much as $100,000 annually.
That's the last week. We hear complaints from other drivers.
Oleg Yuritsky is a spokesman for the city's taxi fleet owners. Yuritsky says owners are just trying to make sure each driver starts his shift with a full tank.
If you come to the driver from the morning shift and tell him, you know, you didn't fill it up, the driver would say, no, I did fill it up, you know, and he would complain. So that kind of complaints we do have, unfortunately.
At the ends of their shifts, drivers for Boston Cab must put shift fees into a zippered pouch and deposit it in a drop safe in a back room at the garage.
Next day when you're coming back, they say to you, you don't pay the weight bill.
Whoever opened the envelope, remove $10, $15, $20, you're telling this guy he didn't put all the money.
Drivers are powerless to dispute that they shortchanged the garage because Boston Cab, like some other fleets in Boston, seldom gives drivers receipts. This is a clear violation of Boston police taxi rules and leaves drivers without proof that they have paid for their shift.
He doesn't give us a receipt. If we ask him, we don't get a cab tomorrow.
The Globe's investigation found that the Boston Police Department, which oversees the taxi industry, tolerates even the most egregious owner behavior. In spite of transgressions by some owners, Boston Police acknowledge that in recent memory, no owner has been stripped of a medallion. Mark Cohen, the city's top taxi regulator, declined to be interviewed for this video, but defended his work to improve the quality of the city's cab fleet and to protect public safety. Police Commissioner Edward Davis told the Spotlight team he is now redoubling his efforts to better regulate fleet owners. Like drivers, Davis said, owners will now be subject to yearly reviews to determine their suitability to own medallions. Boston cab owner Edward Tatunjan, who also declined an interview for this video, said in a written statement that the Globe's assertions about his company are, quote, false and troubling. He said that no taxi driver has ever complained to him about bribes and notes that he entered the business in the 1960s as a cabbie and remembers what it was like. Meanwhile, out of fear of retaliation from powerful medallion owners, many drivers remain silent.
There is no real job out there. And that's the reason why we keep on doing it.
An eye-opener. What a horrible business to be in.
Yeah.
Those people were treated horribly.
Yeah, no, it's true.
And how do you get around that? I mean, it doesn't seem like the police have any interest in changing things.
No.
They're on the side of the company owners.
Yeah.
They granted all these licenses.
It's really, really sad to see that because it really is.
Well, it's just exploitation of labor and workers.
Exactly. That's why you need a union.
Yeah, they definitely need a union. I mean, they wouldn't allow, they're probably told they can't unionize or something.
Of course not. They keep them grunting. They're probably mostly illegal aliens.
They could be.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they are. That's sad. But, you know...
Let's go to some more.
Yeah. I don't know if I agree with all this. I have problems with their immigration and so on and what they're trying to do. But, again, on the humanitarian plane, get those illegal aliens into a union, get them paying, getting paid decent wages, and you'd be amazed, what will happen.
Uh-huh.
There won't be any more illegal aliens. You might as well.
Well, you can't, I don't know what people think. You can send all those people back who've never even lived in South America.
Well, they
most
do if
of
they
them.
Can't get work or if they can't,
Some of them go back themselves
but
if they can't get...
But, aside from doing that, it's just a kind of a ridiculous position to be in. But anyway, let's look at this. The dire consequences of austerity, are dire. Severe budget cuts, also known as austerity policies, expected to be implemented in 119 countries across the globe in 2013, are the wrong solution to the world's economic crisis. Includes a newspaper released by the Initiative for Policy Dialogue in South Center. Rather, sequester is a completely made-up, dumb idea and can be easily repealed by Congress. This year alone, 750,000 people will lose their jobs because of the sequester in the United States. Want to continue that?
Sure, go ahead.
The idea that government spending is needed most when millions are unemployed and the economy needs a kickstart is common sense. Yet those in Congress who have been pushing budget cuts year after year and now support making the misguided sequester permanent seem to avoid employing common sense at all costs. Instead, they keep pushing the same old ideas no matter the consequences. The consequences of austerity are dire. In the page, in the paper, The Age of Austerity, a review of public expenditures and adjustments measures in 181 countries. Authors Isabel Ortiz and Matthew Cummins find that the cost of austerity policies are being thrust upon populations who have been relentlessly coping with fever or with fewer and fewer paying job opportunities. Higher food costs and fuel costs and reduced access to essential services since the crisis began. In short, millions of households continue to bear the cost of a recovery that has largely excluded them. The types of austerity measures being implemented or considered worldwide read like a 1% wish list. Cuts to pensions and social securities, reductions in food and fuel assistance for the poor, job losses and wage cuts for civil service employees, increases in regressive taxes that disproportionately impact low-wage families, and making it easier for fire workers while making it harder to get cost of living adjustments. After Americans left out of the jobless recovery are not alone. The pattern is global and the solutions must be as well. Workers worldwide need robust safety net programs, access to job training and education, investments in infrastructure, and other policies that will promote the virtuous circle of economic growth with shared prosperity. The words are in the world's 99% is waiting. So, it's quite frightening, folks. And
sure is.
We hope you get around doing something about that and listening to this union and listening to what's going on. And what I'd like to do now, I'd like to break away.
And have a little music break?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we'll come back. And
you going to bring us news?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
We'll bring some more news. We have want to bring some health issues to the forefront here. New York Cops Police Department is being sued by a woman who says that officers violated her civil rights when they pepper sprayed her entire family, including a 2-year-old child and a 5-month-old baby. In the lawsuit obtained by courthouse news service on Monday, Marilyn Tyler Taylor accused officers of Marpuli class Sir John Day and Jermaine Hodge were acting when they saw her pushing the stroller through the service entrance instead of going through the subway turnstile. According to the complaint, officers told her 4-year-old child that everything will be okay, but then began pepper spraying the entire family. The pepper spray caused the child to scream out and choke the 2-year-old, who went into fits of vomiting. And this lawsuit says Mr. Taylor was then placed in handcuffs as the minor children cried in pain and fear. Imagine that.
Oh, I think it's terrible.
They pepper sprayed a whole damn family for doing nothing. Yeah. Don Imus thinks Jesus might have been gay. The next day, the court agreed to give Taylor an adjournment in contemplation of a dismissal, allowing the charges to be cropped if she strayed out of trouble. But things did not turn out as well for the children, who, she said, continued to need medical attention because of the pepper spray. And after the attack, mother and father suffered ongoing eye injuries, and all 3 children suffered emotional harms and are now afraid to ride the subways and become afraid when they see police officers. The 4-year-old cried herself to sleep for weeks, and after the incident, the 2-year-old began walking up at night and crying for her mother. And Taylor also claims that her family has continued to be harassed by officers since the incident, forcing them to avoid the MTA through the Atlantic Avenue stop. The family seeks punitive damages for sexual violations, assault, battery, negligence, violation of the state and federal constitution. And that was from courthouse news. So it's pretty frightening.
I'm sorry, folks. I just keep coughing. I have to get a drink here. It's very dry all of a sudden.
Yeah. So let's see. That's a fox. I didn't know.
What was that?
Don Imus is working for Fox.
Since when?
I don't know. I was very surprised. I don't think he worked for me. Fox will hire anybody who doesn't like people.
Yeah.
Any kind of Republican.
You had a few articles last night that we didn't have a chance to read that you said you wanted to read tonight.
Yeah.
I was wondering where those are. Is this one of them that you were talking about?
No.
No.
I just came across this one. I thought it was interesting. It appears it's not. Of course, he says Jesus is, he might have been gay. Yeah, I miss this one. Well, anyway, enough for
him. Why would Fox want that,
though? I don't know why they would. So they can...
To be contrary.
No. Yeah, just to be jerks.
North Korean to only read that.
Yeah, let me get out of here.
Okay.
Hang on a second. I want to go here. Oh, boy, it's so much fun.
It's a little bit slow here, folks. I'm very sorry. I don't need to have so much downtime. You should get a ticket.
I'm pushed on X, but these things said.
Everything takes time.
Yeah.
What are you looking for?
It will come up eventually.
You have too many to go through. Alzheimer's in your brain.
Are you interested in that?
Yeah, I think it's important. Because I think it's a fear that a lot of people have. They're afraid they're going to get Alzheimer's.
But the problem is you got to listen to this guy. I've listened to him before. And you can either schmuck. Right?
Information sharing between private sector companies and under appropriate limits with the government. We believe the best way to further the public debate about CISPA is to be transparent about what we see as the critical problems in the bill and what we think are the solutions to the problems. Therefore, we are publishing a two-page document identifying 8 critical problems in CISPA and with a solution to each. We are also publishing a red line of the bill that shows how it would change if some of our solutions are adopted. We are conveying these proposals to all members of the House Intelligence Committee.
Our fixes to CISPA would be promote civilian, not NSA, control of the federal government cybersecurity program for the private sector. More carefully describe the cyber threat information that can be shared. Specify which laws would be preempted for cybersecurity information sharing instead of preempting all laws. And ensure that information shared for cybersecurity purposes is used for cybersecurity with limited law enforcement exception. And clarify that the bill does not authorize and immunize computer hacking to obtain cyber threats information from another. And add some of the civil liberties protections in last year's Senate bill. You can tell that somebody read that bill.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And while we hope that the transparency and public debate that we promote today by releasing these documents will lead to significant improvements in the legislation, we are under no illusion. CISPA has fundamental flaws, and we seek significant changes. If that cannot be made, CDT will continue to oppose the bill. We also urge the House Intelligence Committee to open its process to the light of day. Last year, the committee conducted the markup of CISPA in secret. This fosters distrust and public misunderstanding. This year, we pulled an open markup of CISPA. This year, it should hold an open markup of CISPA, and amendments should be published in advance so they can be assessed. In short, we think CISPA needs major surgery. We have known how we think it could be performed, and we're asking the committee to do this particular operation in public. It says, while we believe that last year's Senate bill was significantly more protective of civil liberties than is CISPA, it had its own flaws. Like the House, its information sharing provisions would preempt all law, all right? And there were a lot of problems with it. So, anyway, that's about all we have to hold on to. Yeah. You can check on to this, the CDT, Center for Democracy and Technology is the place for that. You can check that. This one I wanted to read. Horror in Israel. 30,000 Mossad spies were exposed.
30,000? Where were they exposed?
Anonymous broke into an Israeli government site.
Show those people. It shows the people that they're spying on, they have no place to hide, though.
Yeah. However, what happened was, and there was a warning. After all, who is better to carry out acts of terrorism than an organization with 30,000 covert operatives around the world, almost all trained in use of explosives and demolitions, building IEDs, carrying bombs, car bomb, kidnapping, and assassination, with a long, very public history of not just murdering people, but getting away with it as well. That was stated last week by the hacker organization Anonymous, a symbolizer of the famous Guy Fawkes mask, hacked Israel's Mossad. And the hack initially exposing a hidden network of 30,000 covert operatives, some openly labeled hitmen, came only days after Israel admitted to their 2010 act of piracy and terrorism against the Freedom Flotilla. And now the Israeli regime has filled the internet with threats against Anonymous if detailed information of their terror cells is leaked.
Huh.
You want to read that, or can you
Where is that? I can't see it. I've got to move over. Excuse me, folks. I'm a little far from the computer. After all, who is better to carry out acts of terrorism than an organization with 30,000 covert operatives around the world, almost all trained in the use of explosives and demolition buildings, building IEDs, car bombs, kidnapping, assassinations, and with a long and very public history of not just murdering people, but getting away with it as well. Every day we see it in the news, dozens killed in Pakistan, dozens more in Iraq, Kenya, Nigeria. The covert army of 30,000 planning terror, building a dozen car bombs a day, and then being able to not just write the lies, blaming others, but in most cases, direct public officials controlled through blackmail, threats of bribery to respond as directed. Oh, did I forget Syria? The army, more correctly, the cells exposed by anonymous includes direct action, assassins, explosive experts, the Mossad signature car bombs and kidnap rendition teams, espionage, made up of trained agent handlers and signals intelligence personnel, often specially trained while posing as doing their national service. This group runs the Pentagon and the White House, makes up congressional employees, most think tanks, AIPAC, the ADL, SPLC. Key espionage operatives are seldom Israeli. Many are Turkish, Saudi, Jordanian, even Cuban diplomats. Controlled opposition. Most obvious are the white supremacists, neo-Nazi groups recently exposed as being funded through Merkel's government in Germany at the direction of the Likudist party in Israel. Nearly every individual organization, with few exceptions, that describes itself as a Holocaust denial, anti-Zionist, or historical revisionist is now funded and directed through Israel. How coy is that, huh? Thought control. No textbook, no university chair, no broadcast executive, nor any news editor is ever employed unless a member of the 30,000. All belong, all are, not just answerable, but actively involved in creating cover stories to shift blame for mass killings, political assassinations, economic crime, or supply, is simply to put forth a continual drumming of the big lie.
The birth by murder and the first major act of terrorism by Israel's Irgun, the predecessor to the Mossad, was in 1949. America's first Secretary of Defense, an office Chuck Hagel only recently assumed, a man under 24-hour protection against Mossad agents, assassins, even today, was James Forrestal. Under the guidance, Forrestal was an enemy of Stalin, and in his inner circle of Zionists, who, with the influence of Secretary of Treasury Henry Morgenthau, took control of President Truman, pushing him to back the occupation of Palestine by communists, establishing a Soviet foothold in the Middle East under the guise of a Jewish state. I read reports where actually Truman was given $2 million by the Zionist Rothschild to identify the Jewish state. And when the now reviled Senator McCarthy claimed the State Department was filled with communists, he was totally correct.
Bernard Baruch told Forrestal that Zionists were going to kill him. The Irgun had tried to kill British Foreign Minister Brevin in 1946. Forrestal, Secretary of Defense, was continually attacked by the media. Walter Winchell and Drew Pearson, the most influential columnists of the day, wrote scathing accounts against Forrestal continually. Assassination teams following Forrestal were arrested more than once, but released on orders from President Truman, who in March of 1949 finally fired Forrestal over his opposition to Israel's ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people. Soon afterwards, Forrestal was poisoned and taken to Bethesda Navy Hospital. While there, he was thrown out of a 16-story window, his body showing signs of a desperate struggle, the room in disarray. Walter Winchell, an accused Stalinist agent, called Forrestal's death a suicide, a verdict certified later despite evidence to the contrary. The control of the press, likely 10,000 of the identities anonymous excess, seen today, was alive and well many decades ago. As decades later, the public became aware that killings of Forrestal, the Kennedys, Martin Luther King, even prominent American Jews like Senator Paul Wellstone and his family were Mossad operations.
Hollywoodism spin on the Forrestal assassination is a classic. We are told that Secretary of Defense Forrestal killed himself because his brain had been taken over by one of the aliens that crash-landed at Roswell, New Mexico in 1947. Jeremy Kagan, producer of the 81 film, The Chosen, depicting New York's Hasidic community, is responsible for the 94 film, Roswell, which implies Forrestal was murdered by aliens. We have seen it for over 60 years. If the trail leads to Tel Aviv, it must have been Little Green Men. So anyway, that's what happens. So we will...
So there's no news without the Mossad.
That's right. And I'm telling you, Anonymous is cool, you know.
And that was by Gordon Duff and Press TV.
Yeah, I'm just
very good.
I'm just curious. Military headline news.
Too long with the, or we'll be able to read a little bit of it. This is by Benjamin Fulford from Veterans Today.
Yeah, I don't trust this guy's work. So I'm sorry, I will close that tab. Nobody believes Fulford. Sorry, this Veterans Today guy took his word for anything. Very sorry about that. We've been duping people all around.
No, I wasn't aware of that.
Wolford is a duper. He's a duper.
Well, we're almost to the end of the show anyway,
but,
so.
Anyway. Yeah, no, this guy is kind of a duper, you know, dupes people. This is kind of an interesting one. This lady said, what she wants to do, pretty scary. We'll make the premium so high you'll be forced to turn in your guns.
Democrats propose a $10,000 fine for gun owners who don't have insurance. The contingent of liberal Democrats in Congress is proposing a new federal gun control idea, mandatory liability insurance for gun owners. When New York Representative Carolyn Maloney introduced legislation last month with 8 other Democrats, she boasted that this is the first bill to require liability insurance of gun buyers nationwide. Maloney's Firearms Risk Protection Act requires gun buyers to have a qualified liability insurance policy before they're able to legally purchase a firearm. It also calls for federal government to impose a fine as much as $10,000 if a gun owner doesn't have insurance and a firearm purchased after the bill goes into effect. It's just another way for insurance companies to make it money.
Yeah, insurance companies are going to make it a killing. And,
no pun intended.
And we're going to be, you know, paying for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the legal gun owners will pay for it, and the guys who do all the murders and stuff, they don't pay anything. They get their guns free. They either steal them or they buy them on the black market.
And she's not going to have any effect on that.
No. I mean, that that's one of the most stupid bills.
All it is preventing folks from owning guns. That's all.
That's all it is. That's all it is. So we just want to thank everybody who joined us tonight. And talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you, folks. Talk to you tomorrow. Good night.